Okay, let's start. As already introduced, I'm a former Debian maintainer, and I've been contributing to NixOS since 2015, after I got fed up with normal distributions are doing package management and how configuration management is built on top of package management, but you always run into trouble if you use tools like Puppet, Chef, or Ansible. And since then, I started like looking into new things. And one of the things that I really like is NixOS. Since then, I've been release manager, and I'm on the security team. And on my day job, I'm an infrastructure engineer at Mayflower. I've been able to work on company time for NixOS at Mayflower. And we are providing consultancy services for the NixOS ecosystem. So about this talk, I've done a few Nix introduction talks. This will be no real Nix introduction talk. I want to showcase some Nix concepts and their value to the greater Linux distribution community. So it will be on a technical level, and I assume that we have some Unix knowledge. But please do ask questions during the talk if something is not clear. Okay, so about the terms I'm going to use. So Nix is a package manager that was developed around 2005 as part of a PhD thesis in the Netherlands by Elko Dolstra. Nix is also used as a term for the Nix expression language. That's a purely functional programming language that was tailored to defining package builds. And there's Nix PKGs or Nix packages. That's a package set containing package build definitions for like 70,000 packages. For instance, we automatically import the Haskell package set, so all Haskell packages are by default available and tested for our environment. And it's just a GitHub repository, a big GitHub repository with over like 1,000 contributors. And there's NixOS, which is built on top of Nix and on top of Nix PKGs, the package set. That's building a whole Linux distribution with the kernel, with the bootloader. There are service modules that basically replace configuration management and a few other goodies. There's also NixOps, which is a deployment tool that fits into the whole ecosystem. With that, you can deploy NixOS systems to like EC2, to a local virtual box for testing, or to just a host that has NixOS installed via SSH. Okay, let's get started. The typical procedural approach to package management roughly works like this. You have some packaging instructions and metadata, and you have the state of the file system, which includes headers, libraries, and all the dependencies you want to have. You take those, you invoke the build system of the software you want to package, which then builds the software, and the files are then placed on the file system at a specific prefix, normally /usr, and that in turn modifies the state of the file system, and after that you can build other software that depends on that new software that you just built. So what happens here? The build results depend on an inherit state by previous builds or by previous package installs, and installing packages modifies the global file system state. Okay, so far so good. Now, if you go to the functional approach, you have to understand one thing: what is purely functional in that context? You maybe know functional programming languages like Haskell, Scheme, Lisp, but purely functional is quite a very strict definition of a functional language. That is, functions are pure if and only if they always evaluate to the same results given the same arguments. For instance, this might not be true for languages like Scheme or Lisp, because they are not purely functional, but languages like Haskell or ACTA are purely functional. They have no side effects, and the evaluation of a function causes no semantical observable side effects either in the system or the program itself. That means purely functional. So how do we like do that in a package management environment? The functional approach also has packaging instructions and metadata as the input, and that it will invoke the build system of the software package. But in these packaging instructions and metadata, all the dependencies are also included. The output will then be stored in some unique prefix, so not /usr, but some other prefix, and that will later be used in the packaging instructions to refer to that exact version of the program. Okay, but what do we gain from that? So one thing we gain is we have a conflict-free system. We can have multiple versions of different programs installed, or the same program installed, because they are installed in a completely different prefix. By definition, it has to be immutable, because you always want to have the same software. It's also reproducible, because you always define what exact dependencies you want to have. So not only the version, but all the transitive dependencies along the way. And you can do atomic operations on them, because you can assume that you have no conflicts, everything is immutable, and everything is reproducible. So how does this look in practice? In practice, Nix has a concept called Nix Store. That is that custom prefix where all programs will be installed. In this example, I have crypt setup, which you probably all know. It will be installed in /nix/store. Then a hash sum, and that hash sum is built over all inputs, so all dependencies and the package build definition. So if you altered the package build definition, like increase the version or add a new command that does some fixing up, for example, you will get a new hash and a new store path. That, of course, means that if you change something, you need to rebuild that package and all packages depending on that package. So for instance, if we update glibc, we have to rebuild everything. You might say now that that's a bad thing, but actually it's a good thing, because we always, if you like, change some core library, we always bootstrap everything. And we make sure that it's buildable every time. For instance, in Debian, you have situations where after some library bump, we have to recompile software. And in Debian, it's a very concerted effort to build the libraries or the programs that depending on the library and then upload them. We don't do that. We always like rebuild everything. Okay, we also have a notion of multiple outputs. So that crypt setup you saw has like all the binaries you can execute, the libraries, and some stuff in share local. We also have a development package, we call that output, into the store path. That's the dev output. And in the dev output, we have stuff like the headers or the package config file and some special Nix support files. Okay, so how do we do that? We lock every single dependency down to the Nix store path. So if you look at the libraries used by crypt setup, the crypt setup binary, you see that every single library has a fixed R path to the exact version of the library that it was compiled with. So if I, try to scroll. It doesn't work right now. As you can see, it's just the whole store path, and after that comes the library from that exact store path. So far, so good. This is for like normal ELF executables, but what about other stuff? How do we lock down the dependencies there? So for instance, this is a Borg or a Borg backup. It's a Python program for doing backups, and not only does Borg require some Python libraries, it also requires OpenSSH to SSH into machines and copy backups there. So what we are doing is, this is the Borg executable. It has a shebang that is fixed to a specific version of Bash. This is just a wrapper script that appends the path to open to the OpenSSH bin folder into the path, and then executes the actual Python executable or the Python script of Borg. If you look at the wrapped Python script of Borg, we see that the Python interpreter on the top, the shebang here, is also fixed to a specific Python version. And there's some special stuff inserted that that adds the needed Python libraries to the Python side path. So for instance, Borg needs Cython, LLFuse, and ContextClip 2. They are added and explicitly defined, and only that exact version will be used. We do that not only for Python, not only for shell scripts, but for Haskell, for Ruby, for whatever language you can think of, even Node.js. And NPM. There's another concept called profiles. These are basically version symlinks, where you can have a set of packages or a set of store path that you can put together and put into an environment, and then like version it and do like updates or changes and then roll back. What you see here is that there's a main symlink. In this case, it's the system profile, and it links to a version of the system profile, which then links to the specific system profile version. This works for like the system profile in that case, but we also have user profiles. And if we, for instance, look at the system profile, this is a NixOS operating system profile, which includes stuff like the activation script to activate the system, /etc, which we also statically generate, some firmware, the init RD, the kernel modules, and SV is the actual software available on the system, which is also like a sub-environment. And we also have like systemd on there, which is kind of special because it's the init system. We also have user profiles because we have multi-user package management. So every user can actually use Nix if Nix is installed on the system in multi-user mode and can build their own package that is only available for them. For instance, in the user profile, user profiles are also versioned, and user environments include also their own prefix, where every software that is defined in the environment is linked together. And it's made sure that it, all the software finds the exact versions of the dependencies that are needed. So for instance, if I look at my path variable, when I log in, I see that NixVanix profiles per user, there's the username missing, fplets profile /bin, is in my local path variable, so I can execute everything that I installed in my user profile by default. Okay, so how do we achieve parity in Nix? So on the concept level, a package, or how we call it, a store path in the Nix store, is a result of a pure function that is written in Nix and has, as said before, no side effects. And the result on it depends on the function arguments without the side effects. Okay, so if we are in a Nix build environment, we have a sandbox in place. So on the one hand, we have that functional definition, which by itself is like functional. We use, of course, Linux namespaces and C groups, just as any container technology nowadays would use. You can think of it like a lightweight container, but we don't use like every namespace out there, just the ones that are useful to achieve the level of isolation we want in the build environment. We set a fixed time, so every build will be executed with a fixed timestamp. All created files will have a fixed timestamp so that there's no deviation between when you build it or on which machine you've built it. There is no networking available, so you can't just do like npm install to install dependencies that you don't know like the real contents and the version of, because like other package managers just download stuff depending on the on the branch or the version. And we also do stuff like patching the shebangs of shell scripts or like some build scripts automatically that are in the source tarball. And we have some patches to tooling to ensure reproducibility. We don't have much patches left because we are also part of the greater reproducible build effort. And a lot of stuff has already been upstreamed. So not much patches are left. So at some point, we have to introduce impurity. And one of the impurities we have is fetching source tarballs. So what we do is, if we have impurity, we always guard the package definition by a checksum, in particular with a cryptographic checksum of the contents. So if we, for instance, define the package crypt setup, and we fetch the sources from a kernel mirror, we always include the checksum of the content so that we can be sure that we always get the same source tarball. There's, I think, a slide missing, but what this is called is it's a fixed output derivation where you already know beforehand what the output of that build is going to be like. So you can think of this fetch URL call as another package that will be installed, but you already know what contents it will be like. So in that case of a fixed output derivation, we enable networking and downloading is actually possible. This is the only way you can do impure stuff. You could, for instance, do like npm install in a fixed output derivation, but then the output has always be the same, and it won't be. Okay, so how is the Nix package set structured? In Nix, there are this data type called attribute set, which is basically a key value pair or like a key value map of key and values. And here's a small snippet of some examples. For instance, we have crypt setup that calls the function call package with the definition of crypt setup, which is in some other folder. For instance, if we look at ethercap, this is special because ethercap doesn't compile with a recent version of OpenSSL, which we have by default. So we have to pin OpenSSL to an older version to make that package compile. So in this case, OpenSSL 102. And if you look at OpenSSH, we do something similar for PAM because the Nix package set can also be used on Darwin systems where no PAM is available. So if we are on Linux, then PAM is available. Else, PAM will be null, and PAM will not be used for package builds, because on Darwin it would fail. We can do similar stuff in like more complicated code for like every package out there, so we get exactly the variation of dependencies that will build for that system that you're currently on, or like for which you define the build. Okay, so on to defining a package build. This is actually what's in this directory where call package will go look for the source. And on the first line, you see basically a function definition with some arguments, call standard end, fetch URL, LVM2. These are the same attribute names that are present in the top level attribute set. So call package just passes the right attribute set names with the values to the package build. And after that, we have the first line, the actual definition, which says we want to make a derivation, which is like the internal name in Nix for intermediate format for like defining package builds. And we use stdenv here, which is the standard environment, which includes a lot of like convenience wrappers for build tools. So, for instance, if you have an AutoTools project or a CMake project, we already have code in there that detects that and we automatically call the right build instructions for your build system. Of course, not everything is supported, but most of it is. So if we continue, we define a name. We already looked at source. It's just a fetch URL call. We can add patches, like define custom configure flags, because in this case, we are dealing with an AutoTools project, so we have configure flags. And we even can do stuff like, if Python is enabled by that flag, we also add the enable Python flag to configure. Then we have the definition of the dependencies. We have on the one hand native build inputs, which are dependencies that are to be run on the system where the software will be compiled. And build inputs are the dependencies for the system on which the package is to be run. Because we have native support for cross-compiling, like for instance, I can cross-compile on my machine, my x86 machine, a package for ARCH64. But for that to work, I need the package config for my system because it has to run on my system, but I need the LVM2, for instance, of AH64. So that it's, there are even like more options for that because there's some more cases, but this is the normal easy case. And we can define the outputs, which in this case is just the default output, the dev output, and the main output. And the cool thing is these outputs are also like automatically generated. So if I define a dev output, the standard env wrapper will automatically add configure flags so that the include files will only be installed to the dev output and the main pages will all be installed into the main output. You can also do that manually and the whole package build is divided into phases. You can add hooks to like the install phase, the build phase, the configure phase, and like do your own thing if it's a non-standard package build, which is mostly the case. Okay, so on to Next packages. You can override packages. So if you're a user of Next packages, you can say, well, there's this cause package, but I want to like execute as muse. So I can add a post install hook that just adds a link to cause called muse in the output. And if I then use anything that installs cause for my local user, I will get that version of cause that has the link to muse. You can also do that in an XOS configuration, but we get into that later. And so, Nick, you don't have to understand anything that's on the slide. Package overrides are an old concept because you can only refer to packages after they've been fully evaluated. So Nix packages itself evaluates the whole Nix package set to a fixed point, which basically means that the dependency resolution will be taken care of like the fixed point combinator. And the cool thing about that is that you can hook into it and override packages, but without like having like an infinite recursion. If you like override a package and you access something in that package again. So that's basically everything that happens behind that with some example. Because like if everything is a function, like in that case, that always takes itself as an argument, you can refer to attributes like foo and bar in the package set itself, but because it will be recursively evaluated until there's nothing left that has to be evaluated. So this is implemented in pure Nix. This is the fix function. There's nothing magic going on. It's available in every functional language. And if you evaluate that, this function, we get what we expect. So the concatenation of foo and bar as a string. And if we go one step further and create extensible attributes that can be like where you can define overrides. You can define an extends function that you don't have to understand. But the cool thing is now we can define a new function called g that takes self and another super argument. And then you can redefine foo by the previous version of foo, and you can change it, for instance. So in a normal case, when you define it like that above with the fix function, it would result in an infinite recursion. But in that case, if you use fix and extends with those two functions, you get what you expect. We override foo with foo plus, and if we evaluate foo bar again, which that function will do, we get foo plus bar instead of like foo bar. So that is what's happening under the hood for every package you define. And with that, we can define much more powerful overrides. We call it overlays. You see the same here. We are using self and super as arguments. And then for instance, if we want to override boost, we just say we use the previous version of boost, like the version of boost before our overlay was introduced and evaluated. And we override Python with Python 3, for instance, because we want to have like the boost Python libraries with Python, built with Python 3. And now we have a boost built with Python 3. Also, you can do that with like your own packages. You can just call package, like in the top level package, next packages definition, have your local package definition here. And for instance, you want to compile it for 32-bit, no problem. There's a standard end for 32-bit. And you have on your x86 machine, x86 64-bit machine, 32-bit executable. And to use it, when you like instantiate next packages, you can just add it as a parameter, both in the NixOS configuration via environment variables or like at import time. The next concept are development environments. The tool we use is called NixShell. If you append a dash A, you go into the build environment of that specific package. So if I do NixShell dash A crypt setup, I'm in the build environment of crypt setup, and all dependencies for crypt setup are available. If I would be in a Git checkout of crypt setup, I could just call configure, and everything it needs is available. If I exit the shell, everything is gone again. And this works for like C libraries, Python packages, Ruby packages, Haskell, whatever. But not only that, also all the phases are available. So if I call the special generic build function, the whole package build will be called or just like executed. And also you can invoke specific phases. So you could say, I want just to invoke the configure phase, and only configure with the specific configure flags defined in your package definition will be executed, or I just want to like call the build phase. And so you can do like incremental builds, changing stuff, patching stuff. Oh yeah, now it works. Create the patch, put it in NixPKGs. Yeah, it works. You can also do that for like your development projects. You can do on the one hand imperative environments. So in that example, I want to execute Python 3. Python 3 is not available in my normal environment. So I open a NixShell with dash p to have the Python 3 package available. After that, I'm in a NixShell denoted by that special prompt. And if I then call Python 3, it's available. But not only that. If I want to use the requests Python package, which is not available because it's like a regular Python, I exit the shell. I use Python 3 and the Python 3 package's requests. And after that, request is available. If you want to use declarative environments, you can create a Nix file, for instance, in the project root of your software, where you can define which packages are needed for like building, developing, building some front-end stuff. And in this case, it's basically also a make derivation with build inputs, and this is just another way to denote which Python package you want. After that, you can just execute nix shell, because nix shell uses the default nix in the local directory by default, and you're in nix shell, and you can do like development. Okay, Nixos demo time. I don't have that much time left, so I skip it for now, because I have a slide prepared for that. So key features of NixOS are we have atomic upgrades and rollbacks, because everything is just one symlink. If I want to switch from one NixOS version to the next, do a package upgrade, do a configuration change or whatever, it's just one symlink I have to change, and a shell script to execute, of course, but one symlink and the new system is active. Multi-user package management, already told about that. You just have to write one configuration file, and you can build it for like a multitude of targets. You can build Docker images, ISOs, netboot images, container tarballs, whatever. We have about 800 service modules available. So like for Nginx, Apache, Nextcloud, GitLab, I don't know, so much software, so much modules, which make it very easy to set up, for instance, Grafana, which I had for a, prepared as a demo, which is just a few lines of code, complete with Let's Encrypt certificate and everything. And we also have containers with systemd and spawn and a testing framework using VMs. We have some features coming up. For instance, to use like Nix for Nix expressions as a package manager itself. It's called Nix Flakes. Or like we want to use systemd networkd by default. We have to bump the GCC version and some more. Oops. And we have some challenges. For instance, we have a world readable Nix store. That means like you don't have to, you shouldn't put secrets into the Nix store. This is a thing that we can't like easily fix for now. Also, we don't match application state. That's for the administrator to do. And our declarative containers don't support user namespaces because systemd doesn't support dynamic user in systemd and spawn containers with user namespacing enabled. That's an issue we still have. Okay, and that's it for now. If you don't have questions, I have the demo for you. Everyone wants to see the demo. No, there's a question.
I think I know what a bunch of the answer is this, but I'll ask it of you. What's the current state of ARM64 support on Nixos?
Good question. We have first-class ARM64 support in Nixos, and actually the ARM64 builds are much quicker than our x86 builds because we Packet, which is also a sponsor of this conference, donated a lot of build machines to us because we have to build, as we've said, we have to build, rebuild a lot of stuff. So we need a lot of powerful systems, and thanks to PacketNet, we can do that for at least two architectures, which are our main release architectures, which are x86-64 and ARM64.
So I wanted to ask about the language used in the configuration files. How long is it going to take to learn it, or why not use like an existing function? I don't know what it is actually. So
okay, I didn't introduce Nix itself because the language because it would take too much time. But you saw a little bit of that. So it takes a little bit getting used to, because some of the syntax elements you see you maybe know from other languages, but they are not. So if you already like did some functional programming with any functional language, you might be quicker to learn it. But if you're not, if you've not yet before used a functional language, it might take a while. But the problem itself is not the Nix language, but all the concepts and all the abstractions we have for package builds. So you have to know the specifics. We have a lot of documentation by now, but most of the times you will have to read source code. And for beginners, you should read the source code of, for example, NixPKGs to like understand what Nix language constructs are useful and you should you actually use. So if you want to use it, there's a very steep language learning curve ahead of you. but in my opinion, it's worth it. Okay, how much time do I have left? What? Or? 5 minutes. Then we can do the demo. Okay, so I have a machine on the internet, you see on the right, and an SSH on the left. You can see that not much is running on there. I have a Nixos configuration, which is by default in /etc/nixos configuration. And this is basically what it looks like. So there's some bootloader configuration, there's some networking configuration with IP addresses, default routes, DNS server. I enable bash completion, I make some tools available, I add some public SSH keys, I enable OpenSSH, I open the firewall. And if you now look, here, that's the domain, nothing is available, the port 80 or 443 are closed. And I now go back to the configuration, and I enable these two services. So I enable Nginx, we enable a virtual host, and enable ACME, which automatically fetches an Let's Encrypt certificate for me. I use ForceSSL to add an HTTPS redirect, and proxy to like localhost 3000, where Grafana is running if I enable it and don't configure it anything by default. And if I want to apply that, I just call Nixos rebuild switch, which will build the configuration and download the software package as needed, which it's doing now, and rebuild some stuff like our users and groups, some systemd units, the whole user environment, like system environment where all the software is installed. And if it's finished, it should start the Nginx service, the Grafana service, the services to fetch the ECMA certificates, and that should be it. Let's see. It's a VM running on a virtual host somewhere, so it's not that fast, unfortunately. And I think my time is up. Okay, now you see, systemd service were restarted or started. And if I go into the browser and refresh, we see bad gateway because Grafana is still starting up. The favicon is already there because I was on that page before, but nah. Grafana, come on. There it is.